Welcome to episode 435 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have a grand conversation with a great friend of the program, writer, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Martina Majok. We talk with Martina about the restaging of her latest work, Sanctuary City, about the immigrant experience, chance and circumstance, the reworking of another one of her plays, Queens, as a television program for HBO, being in London to work on a libretto for The Great Gatsby. We discuss F. Scott Fitzgerald, our American society as of late, and raising kittens, among other things. A wonderful conversation with Martina Majok. We have an EW essay titled Docile. And our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, shares five poems about the bombing of Hiroshima, written by school children and part of a collection titled When I Was Small. We have an EW poem called Purpose, and of course, all of this will be infused and imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It's so nice to be with you. Let's get to it. Episode 435 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. Docile. I am not sure what to say today. It all seems so plain and simple, without a wrinkle. The need to succeed at being someone, though what that means exactly is where the difficulty resides. This neck on the right side of mine has been tight and stiff for a bit over a week. I believe it has something to do with the answers and understanding I seek. Jesus said something about how the riches of the earth shall be inherited by the meek. I don't like that message. It sounds like a means by which masses of people can be manipulated into being docile and obsequious, as those who hoard power feast at the table set nicely for them, as one after another we prepare and give a multitude of resources and toil, as if our existence is nothing but a covered dish to be enjoyed when and how they see fit. No appreciation, entitled to all of it. The myths and legends, the darkness and the heavens, our love and fear, our jealousy so subtle, the notions of winners and losers and castes, hierarchies, lust, forlorn fervor for fortunes of a physical world, the promised land or bust, lures us away from lush lives of togetherness, simple and deep, these stories not lived nor written, and thus forever untold. Though time remains for me and thee to wake up and be Buddha-like and bold, the sun, moon, stars, streams, rivers, oceans, lakes, dreams, dirt, trees, flowers, air, are without apathy or despair. Like a newborn sapiens, they are just arrived again here, no worse from where, instead beautifully prepared.
As the earth returned to calmly dress itself in white, we got a glimpse of all the people going out tonight. Big guys and little guys and bad guys and cubs. I bet they can't get enough. Tonight I wanna be on Broadway and in cabaret. Tonight I must go out and celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Tonight I must demand a raise so I can grab, let's say, some private placements and strawberry laces. No spaces, beautiful faces.
Hello.
Hey, Martina Mayuk, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours again.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. For those who do not know who Martina is, she is a writer. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, 2018 for drama. Cost of Living is the work. And we've talked, I don't know, this might be sixth or seventh time. I don't know. It's,
Really?
yeah, it's great. I
Oh,
feel honored.
me too.
And I know you're working on getting right now back on stage since the pandemic. Another one of your plays, Sanctuary City. And we're going to talk about that as well as how things have been going since the pandemic. Cats, I think, helped you out a bit, right?
That's right.
So, how is everything going?
It's going pretty well. I mean, I feel like knock wood and everything. Like we started rehearsal on Tuesday and have a shorter rehearsal period because we were about a week and change away from opening. So we're mostly remembering the show. And it's just been really wonderful to be with that group of people again. And now I'm just hoping everyone stays healthy and hoping people feel comfortable seeing the show, or how we can bring the show to people who may not feel comfortable, showing up in a theater. But knock wood, things are going real good right now.
That's excellent. And I know the show was just getting started back in 2020, and people were just starting to come in, and critics were just starting to look at it. I don't know if you got an official critical review.
No, we never got to open. Actually, I think we were a few days away from our freeze date, so critics weren't even coming in. I don't think I was still technically able to make changes to the show, but we were like a week and a half from opening. So no, in a sense, it feels like, oh, it didn't happen. Like 2 months of work and years of work on that play sort of didn't happen because there wasn't critics weren't able to come in. But it might have been what saved our opportunity to do the show again, partially, is because it didn't feel like it got to be shown.
Right. If it did, then maybe it would have been just a really short run. And
Yeah,
okay.
for sure.
I know our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, he had a chance to see it in the previews and he loved it. And I trust his judgment. He thinks he's one of your biggest fans. So,
Oh.
and just for people who don't know, I'm reading from Playbill. What Sanctuary City is kind of about, dreamers, friends, and lovers negotiating the promise of safety and the weight of responsibility in America. Very, very short summary, but maybe it gives a taste. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, this it's kind of a, it's I guess it's a history play, you could say. It starts in 2001, right after 9/11, and it follows two then teenagers, both immigrants, one who's undocumented, and when one of them becomes naturalized, they decide to get married in order for the other to be able to stay in the country and pursue his education. And then you'll see what happens.
Right, you don't want to give it all away. Now, were you working on this before Cost of Living, your Pulitzer Prize-winning play, or was it right after? Is it
It was after after Cost of Living, I was working on a play called Queens, and one day while I was writing that play, which took slash is still taking, I don't feel like I ever quite figured out that play. And it may be that the way to figure out that play is actually through a series, which is what I'm doing with it now. But I was working on the play on Queens, and one night there was a dreamer character who walked into the narrative, and that night I couldn't sleep because I kept thinking about somebody from my life. Got up at 3 in the morning because the thoughts just kept churning, and started writing what I thought were, notes to myself, which realized I was like, oh, I think these are notes for a play. I was like, oh, actually, no, I think I'm writing the play. And then in 3 days, I had the draft of Sanctuary City, and that I've been sort of like developing ever since.
Wow. Sanctuary City is spawned from Queens.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, there. So it was like March 7, 2017, I think it was, when I started writing that play.
It's neat how you remember the dates. Do you date all your work as you're doing it?
I think the reason why I remember it was because of Trump, to be honest. I was like, oh yeah, this is when this was the beginning of that time.
Oh yeah. we shouldn't have mentioned his name, but
I know. Sorry. I know I ruined it.
It's good that he's in the past.
Yeah.
I hope he's in the past. I don't know.
I remember it was like, it was the ban on travel for particular Muslim countries had just happened in January. Just felt like I was surrounded by that news and by other news, and as well as just, you know, memories and of people who had gone through similar things many years before. And so I think that was, yeah, that's why I think I remember that time.
I think it's St. Patrick's Day, isn't it too? Isn't that St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, so maybe I was drinking. All the memories bubble up.
I hear you. So Sanctuary City, and I think I'm looking at the dates here now. It's in September. September 8th is a significant date, I remember. And opening night, though, is the 21st, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's at the Lucille Lortel Theater off Broadway. Well, I wish you, you know, break a leg.
Thank you.
And hopefully we get a chance to check it out. I guess right now the run is into October, but maybe it'll get extended. You don't know yet.
I hope. Yeah, it sort of depends on whether folks are comfortable coming to the theater.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And I know you were in London recently. You've been working. Yeah. You mentioned Queens in a series. Are you talking about a television series?
Yeah, I'm developing the idea for HBO for an hour-long drama series based on the characters within Queens. That's so right cool. Now we're calling it Queens, but I think I heard recently that there is a show that's coming out that is called Queens, so I got to figure that one out. But
yeah, and then you have the King of Queens, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to get mixed up.
Yeah, there's a few, like, yeah, and then like two dub queens. I'm like, maybe, all right, I gotta maybe find something a little bit more distinct.
But Queens, I mean, the setting is in Queens, which is, right?
Yeah, yeah, the setting is in Queens, and it's a story of a group of immigrant women from different countries. And so I was like, oh, double meaning. I felt very proud of myself for a second. Now I'm like, man, there's a few other people. And you know, Queens in the sense of the way, like what they have to deal with, to me, is the height of the pressure of what a queen would have to do, running one's own domain on their terms. So I felt it was appropriate, but might need to shift.
And it's kind of autobiographical, right? I mean, with regard to your mom.
I guess all of the plays are in somewhat. There's some sort of autobiography in the sense that, like, either I witnessed my mom, my family, or some of my friends, people I grew up with, going through some of the things in the plays, but I never feel like it's not particularly inspiring for me to kind of do like docudrama or journalism, just because it's not like emotional journalism, I guess, like the letting emotional and memory and imagination be the thing that drives it, but coming out of something that felt that was true. But yeah, so muddy autobiography, while concealing as much as I possibly can about who the things happened to. But yeah, my mom's for Queens, it is partly my mom's like experience with the various migrations, I guess, that you go through, from going from a country to another country, to a community, to another community, to when you when you're sometimes abandoned by your own community and who you have to then like seek out, making makeshift families, and kind of like as relational migrations, and especially for a single woman or a woman with, you know, or a single mother who has to figure out her own life as well as the life of her family. I swear it's funny. I always talk about them like they sound so sad, but like, I swear it's funny.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a fine line, I think you would agree, between tragedy and hilarity, right? I don't even know if it's a fine line. I think it's so absurd sometimes you can't help. But I remember my grandmother, for example, she was an immigrant, and she could hardly speak English. And her husband was killed in the coal mine when she had a bunch of kids. And she laughed a lot, though. I remember when she was laughing, and you'd ask her, you know, why are you laughing, Nana? And she'd say, well, if I weren't laughing, I'd be crying.
That's right.
Now, your mom was, she emigrated from Poland, right? And were you born in Poland or were you born here?
I was born in Poland. We came over together when I was a kid. It was just it's just the two of us in America, and my half sister was born here in Newark.
And right around Hoboken, I guess, is that where you were raised?
Yeah, and around Newark, yeah.
Newark, right. And you worked hard, and you're a good student, and you ended up going to some great colleges, and wrote, and here you are today.
I felt like there was luck. There's been luck along the way. Like I loved school. I loved learning and reading, and also like the validation of doing well in school. I was like, oh, look, I got an award. And then like people would pay attention to me. I was like, oh, I like this feeling. Like pursue this feeling. But I feel like there's people ask a lot about like, oh, American dream. Like, oh, you've achieved your American dream. And I'm like, I'm not happy. Like, I don't feel fulfilled. I mean, I feel grateful, but I don't feel like, oh, I've achieved certain things and therefore like I'm done, and there's no longer a gaping hole of need and sadness that I have to like negotiate and work around. But like I could have at any moment, like there was not a safety net, there was not a financial safety net, there was, you know, I grew up with a lot of violence as well, and my experience of growing up is not that dissimilar from a lot of the people that I did grow up with, for whom things didn't turn out necessarily, I don't know, in the same, like from the outside, oh, you've achieved your American dream. They might be happy, but they might be happier. I guess I just want to, like, yeah, I worked hard, and I went to schools that seemed from the outside fancy because of scholarships and things like that. But I just know that isn't, it's part of it is like luck and not for lack of trying, that other people did not achieve that. I think there are many like opportunities for stumbling along the way that like when you're coming from a more precarious upbringing, you just, it's harder to get there, I guess. And so this is my like shout out to the folks that like, yeah, I feel very fortunate, and it could have easily been them, like minus one or two big moments of like trauma.
I get it.
Yeah,
I totally get it. I'm reading a book now that puts things into perspective. I know you might have read it, Sapiens. It was pretty.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's got some interesting insights, things that I knew about, but just you're connecting me to the realization, the insight that even if you are very talented and you work hard, depending on what the context is that you're coming up in, the culture, the community, you know, that spells out the kind of access and opportunity you're going to have, and the challenge, extra challenges, as you're putting it, that you might have that could build you or could cause you to get lost or get tripped up, through no fault of your own. So it is amazing knowing all of that again, where you are, but you can't rest on your laurels. I'm sure That's what you're saying too.
Yeah, it's a constant. It doesn't sort of stop. I think which I don't know for good or bad. Like, there's a drive that still exists, but like, and also nothing fixes it. Like, nothing has fixed it. So I'm like, oh, perhaps a pursuit in like accolades and external validation is not the thing, but yet it feels important. And like to add to what we were saying about like luck and circumstances for other people, like when I'm thinking about Sanctuary City, like, you know, the person/people like that undocumented character is based on, like, there are practical true limitations that people in that circumstance were not, like, they were not able to go to school, for example, because they can't apply for financial aid, so they have to rely on scholarships unless they're wealthy. And so it's like, I got scholarships, I got federal financial aid to be able to go to school. Like, that is very, like, that is a very clear and tangible, like, difference between, like, the fact that I then became was not undocumented, and so was able to get financial aid and go to school and then like meet the people and do the, you know, like have the opportunities. Whereas like somebody who might have been just as smart or worked just as hard didn't have access to that, like a very practical limitation that they had.
Exactly. Exactly. By the way, folks, we're talking to Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Martina Majok. And we're looking at some of, I guess, the essence of what drives her, what influences her, and what she's working on at present. Now, a couple of other things here. Girl Interrupted, we can talk about that. That kind of connects to what we're discussing. Also, The Great Gatsby does as well.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yep.
So if you want to share some of, you know, what you're working on in those two projects, and maybe even make some connections if you like.
Yeah, but I just came back from London from a month long workshop where I finished the draft of the libretto adaptation for The Great Gatsby with Florence Welch and Thomas Bartlett doing music. And that book, man. I think I have had a similar journey with that book that most people and most Americans at least have, which is like, I read it in high school and didn't. I was like, yeah, okay. It didn't move me in the same way that it did when I picked it up in January and was in my 30s during a pandemic. I was like, oh God. I mean, it's glorious, glorious, stunning writing. I've gone down the rabbit hole of Fitzgerald, just becoming obsessed with him and becoming obsessed with like the creation of that book. And one of the books I'd read about it, I think it was Maureen Corrigan in So We Read On, which is, there's so much about The Great Gatsby, written about The Great Gatsby, can kind of feel a little bit daunting because you're like, God, it's like been so well mined. But she says about the book that maybe the reason why we love it is that it contains like the idea that we would like to have about ourselves as Americans, not like who we actually are as Americans, but the idea of who we would like to be. There's something that is just like otherworldly, transcendent. There's a yearning for that. There's like a deep longing and yearning throughout the, as well as, you know, humor, which is humor and like and the perspective on that story. And I think the American mentality that is so, that just keys into the stuff, the things that I'm interested in, and reading it in a pandemic while I'm in my 30s, it really is a great book for people in their 30s. You sort of feel like, wait a minute, this is it? Oh no, it might not get any better. Wait, no, but it must. And this fantastic quote that I like now have memorized from Fitzgerald in one of his essays that goes, maybe people know it, but it really had an impact on me. The quote goes, "The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in the mind and still be able to function One must understand that things are completely hopeless and yet be determined to make it otherwise. And I feel like that's like tattooed under my eyelids now, that there's
I love it.
like, yeah, we must, like, you know, it's like we can't go on, we must go on. That there, that
Beckett.
Beckett, yeah, that is that, right. It's like I think sometimes we get this like, oh, it's either sad or it's happy. There's this duality, but I'm like, actually, the pieces of art that speak like most closely are the ones that are able to sustain that. Like, this the dream is broken, and yet we must, like, just feels. It's so incredibly moving to me, and so I love the book, and I've just been happy to be able to spend time with the words and try to find a way to have it do dramatically what it does for me as a reader. And of course I will fail because it's a different thing. I like don't think it's going to ever be the same, but I'm just trying to at least like convey my love for the story. And Florence's music and Thomas's music is beautiful. So I'm just trying my best and having a good time, but I'm proud of what we've made so far.
It sounds exciting. And I suppose it'll be staged in the West End somewhere.
We're actually hoping to premiere in America. It feels important that this very American story has at the moment it's primarily British collaborators, although we're adding more Americans to the creative team. But yeah, I felt important to have it happen in America. And so we're trying to find the place for that, with the hopes, maybe perhaps the dream scenario is that it would be in 2023, in early 2023.
Excellent.
Somewhere here.
I can't wait. So many great things. And that was an inspired reflection on Fitzgerald and the Great Gatsby. Thank you for sharing it.
Oh, I love him. I love him so.
Yeah. I do as well. He's an enigma to me, you know, his personal life and how, you know, I'm very curious about who he was and how. I don't know that there's much out there besides his work. I guess you get it from his work. You know.
Yeah, he's like chronicled his life in such a way as though he wanted to, you know, he's these scrapbooks about his life and has written about his life and journaled and over all these essays that feel like, oh, you wanted people to know, I think, to try to understand yourself as well as like get a full picture.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
I think that we all feel like we're Gatsby, no matter what economic situation we're in as well. Like, most of us feel like we're like this striving person that's gone as far as they could, and yet it's still not enough. Like, they still have to do it. And I think that there's aspects of that in Fitzgerald as well, from like, but isn't that strange? Like, we like do this sort of, we do this psychoanalysis on these authors, like, you know, based on just what they've left us. And like, that's a choice too. Like, there's we can't possibly know the fullness of any one person, but we have this limited writing, which is in itself, it's like a curation of what the person has wanted to leave or what has been found out about them. Like, but it sparks my imagination, and I think the American imagination, because we feel like there's something that is like inherent in the American character within him that he manifests, and like it that is in that book, that I think we want to understand him to be able to understand ourselves and like our American psychology.
I love it. I think you're right on to it. And you know, the whole notion of our American psychology is to try to process and comprehend that is a feat. And I know over the last year and a half or so, we've had extra time to do it, given, you know, with the pandemic, but also some of the social movements that were always there, or I guess the challenges, but now we had extra time to see them and think about them. How is all that playing out for you as an individual and as an artist?
I mean, I feel completely ill-equipped. Like, maybe that's exactly what I'm supposed to feel. I can't help it. This is what I'm supposed to feel. I'm, like, not sure how to respond to... Part of it feels like a lot of it is not my is not my story, and other parts of it feel like absolutely should is like I'm implicated in all of it as well, and like I have zero answers aside from like looking at like, you know, actual community organizers and people who are like on the ground that and feeling like, oh, you guys know how to do this. All I know how to do is to tell stories that like try to expand our understand, like contribute to humanity and like bring us together in terms of other people. But also that feels like a cop out at times, like when there's actual, you know, lives are at stake, but like I'm like I can offer this and like have mostly questions. I feel deep like I'm not ever doing enough, and is it at a loss. I mean, the fact that I can't watch the videos, like I just don't it, I like don't want to, I don't know, have like watch people's final moments be that. I'm stumbling because I don't, I mean, this is like, this has been the whole pandemic. Like I just basically did a performance art piece of like how I felt during the whole pandemic of like, oh God, what do I do? Oh no. What does anything mean? What is the thing to do in during one's finite life? How do we spend this time? Why is this the situation that we're in? When will it ever be enough? The spirals of questions have, I think, like, I mean, personally for me, like I had a tough time. I like had like I don't know if you would call it a breakdown, but I had like a really tough period in the pandemic where I think, it was a lot of questionings of what the fuck life means and what am I doing with my time here being constant. I've always been aware of mortality, I think, in terms of the way that I grew up, but like it was an extra reminder. What have been the values that I have rested my life on? Are they correct? Perhaps could they be better? Oh, notice that you don't feel there is something that feels empty. Why? And like that question, I think, has like led most of what the pandemic is. And maybe that's one's 30s as well. I don't know, but it seems like it just like coincides. My 30s coincide with a pandemic, and so like maybe it feels like the outside is like what's happening internally to me as well. Could ramble, but I don't know.
No, that was not rambling. That was not rambling at all. You know, you're, in my estimation, from my experience talking with you and reading your work, watching your work, you're a brilliant human being. And I mean brilliant not only in your intelligence and your soulfulness, but I mean, you know, you shine too. I'm not trying to overly compliment you because I know it makes you feel uncomfortable. I value artists very much, and good people. And most people have goodness in them, but there are those, I think, who try to cultivate it and try to wrestle with the demons that we all have more so and are aware of it. And I think you're that kind of person. And I don't mean to, I probably don't even know what I'm talking about. And I don't mean to make you feel uncomfortable or oversimplify you, but I like you. I'm happy you're here. And I love your work. I love talking with you.
You too. I like you very much. Hope we can get drinks, very socially distanced drinks at some point soon.
Yeah, me as well. Me as well. I know you have to get to the theater today to work on Sanctuary City. And again, that'll be available for on stage for the public to check out September 21, right?
Well, first show is September 8th. And yeah, we officially open on September 21, running through hopefully, I think, mid-October.
Excellent. And that is at the Lucille... I want to make sure I get it right. Lortel Theater, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's under the New York Theater Workshop. It's within their season, but it's at a different location. Our set had been up the entire pandemic. So that's where we went right back to.
That's just, you had to dust it off.
Yeah, it was kind of a, it was amazing. It was like opening up a chest, like a chest from the past.
And what about the series on HBO that we're calling Queens now, but may have a
We're
different
calling it
name?
Queens. Yeah. I mean, it's still we're still in development, and actually, I have notes about it on Tuesday. So it's a long process. Yes, I'm working on a film for them as well. It's and I feel like a baby in the world of TV and film, but I'm like, oh, it's a lot of notes and producers conversations.
I didn't, we didn't even talk about the film. Is that based on anything you've already worked on, or from first stage, or is it something brand new?
It's yet to be announced, but it's a book. It's an adaptation of a book.
Oh, okay, for a book from the 20th century,
From a few years ago.
a few years ago. Excellent. All right, excellent. And last thing before we let you go, Martina, what did, what did you learn while fostering kittens during the pandemic?
Guys, I highly recommend fostering small baby animals during times of trouble. First off, I learned usually kitten season is in the spring, but because of climate change, it's kitten season all the time now, because of the fluctuating temperatures. So the cats are busy, and there's a lot of baby kittens out there to foster. We fostered two pairs, and it was just the most joyful experience during like the depths of winter, to be able to care for. We already have a cat who hated all the kittens, so we had to keep them separate. But like caring for these small sweet animals and just looking at them like made my face erupt in smiles. And I think it was like just being able to like be outside yourself and care for. I don't have children. This is the closest I imagine to like looking at a baby who smiles back at you and like feeding some kittens who are happily fed, and the feeling of purpose, the feeling of like purpose and joy that that gives you. I cannot recommend it enough to foster kittens or puppies or whatever small animal that you respond to when in times of trouble. Or not in anytime.
Yeah, I hear you. And they're usually so forgiving, right? And
If you feed them, if you keep them warm. We also like it's very fun to name foster kittens. The first pair were called Bruce and Dollar Slice, in homage to my land of New Jersey. And the other pair, because I was in Gatsby land, were named Daisy and Myrtle. So it's just like it's great.
I love it. I remember a pair I had, two white kittens way back. One was Pablo and the other one was Moon Juice.
Yes.
Pablo ran through an easel with paint on it when we first got him. So Pablo, of course,
That's
Picasso.
right.
And Moon Juice was so white, we just,
Yeah.
Moon Juice.
Yeah. When they come in pairs, just like, and this one's called Myrtle Wyckoff, or this one's called like, I don't just like the pairing is very fun. Moon Juice is great.
Martina, you're great. Thank you so
You're
much.
great.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I really, one of these days, we've never really met other than
No.
this way, but I feel like in a little way, I have a connection with you. But, not to be too self-indulgent, you're something of a national treasure in my view, and I look forward to talking with you more and watching you work and seeing all the insight about humanity that you share.
Thank you. I look forward to raising a glass with you one of these days, somewhere, somehow.
Yes, until then,
Yes.
break a leg.
Thank you, everyone. Be safe. I send much love.
Ciao.
Bye.
Chimney falls as lovers plays. I thought that I was young. Now I've freezing hands and bloodless veins as numb as I've been.
come. I'm so tired. I wish I was the moon tonight. Last night I dreamt I'd forgotten my name. 'Cause I sold my soul, but I woke just the same. I'm so lonely, and I wish I was the moon tonight. No place free to go. Paralyzed and collar tight. No pills for what I fear. This is crazy, and I wish I was the moon tonight. Chimney falls as lovers play. I thought that I was young. Now I'm freezing hands. Bloodless veins, as numb as I've become. I'm so tired. I wish I was the moon tonight. How will you know if you found me at last? 'Cause I'll
Five poems by Japanese schoolchildren about Hiroshima from a collection entitled When I Was Small, translated by Rachel Reese. Atomic Bomb Poem, Morihiro Miko, fourth grade. Because I was small at the time, I was in a baby's carriage. All at once it went dim. There was a bright flash all of a sudden, and the carriage I was in was smashed to pieces. Mom and I were trapped underneath. Mom came crawling right away and pulled my hand. My dad was found in the rubble of the castle, dead with the second troop. Untitled, Masanishi Maso, sixth grade. Stacking toy blocks in kindergarten, when we were playing, the atomic bomb fell. The ceiling fell. Yo-chan died. I hurt my head. When we ran with the kindergarten teachers toward a mountain in Koi, we saw a mountain far away on fire. No one said a word. Untitled, Tao Kinu, fifth grade. After the bomb dropped, Mom was cooking the rice we had set aside for a special occasion. What are we fighting for? She said. Takashi, Takashi, come back safely, she said, making rice balls in tears. Untitled, Ikizaki Toshio, fourth grade. The A-bomb fell and put a hole in the house. The wind entered from the hole that had opened in the roof. It's cold. When it's cold, my little sister whines, "Cover the roof with paper." But mother says, "You have to be patient." My sister still complained, "But it's cold." "Even if it's cold, there's nothing we can do about it," mother said, in tears. Untitled, Sato Kamoko, 5th grade. Yoshiko was stuck in bed with her burns. She said she wanted to eat tomatoes, so Mom went out to buy them. While Mom was gone, Yoshiko died alone. "We only fed her potatoes and left her to die," Mom cried. I also cried. Everybody cried.
The stomach is a second brain, as its sharp radiant stress pain tells me my jalopy van and Subaru are a financial drain. I think it would be wise to take a mindful walk inside the light falling rain. What use and purpose is it to complain? It's difficult, though, because that way is such a common everyday refrain.
Early in the morning, rising to the street, light me up.
wishing that I could still get high. I can play the guitar like a fire. Life is so love the one you got, cause you might get run over or you might get shot. Never start on static, I just get it off my chest. Never had to battle with no bulletproof vest. Take a small example, take a did-did-did from me. Take all of your money, give it all to charity. What I got is within my reach, and the subplot style's just straight from Long Beach. It all comes back to you, you're bound to get what you deserve. Try and test that, you're bound to get served. Love's what I got, don't start a riot. You feel it when the dance gets hot.
Love is what I got. I said remember that. Love is what I got. I remember that. Love is what I got.
I don't get angry at the bills I have to pay. I don't get angry when my mom smokes me. Hits the bottle and goes right to the room. Hit and fight and it's all the same. Living with Louis Dog's the only way to stay sane.
Let the loving come back to me.
Episode 435 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Martina Myok, our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, the five young child poets from Hiroshima, and these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Linda Lindell, Declan McKenna, Nico Case, The Five Stair Steps, Sublime, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.